Welcome everyone to another episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. What's up, Seth?
How you doing, Fred?
Doing fine, thank you. All right, we have another week of articles for you for us to analyze about what happened in the EV world and in the Tesla world, especially this week. Wasn't as big as a week as we were used to, but I think there's still a bunch of important news that we can help you break down a little bit. Starting with the announcement that Tesla is finally going back to the capital market for to raise some money. And it was announced, was it on the Thursday? Yeah, Wednesday. No, Thursday. On Thursday that they would raise up to $2.3 billion, both through convertible notes, which is debt that can be converted to share at maturity, in this case, 2024. And that's the bulk of it. At that point, it was up to $1.3 billion. And they are also simultaneously raising money to an equity raise. So it's a secondary offering of stock, 2.7 million shares at this point. So another 600 million or so. 700 million. Yeah, 700 million.
I guess it depends the stock price, right? I mean, the stock has gone up quite a bit, so
yeah, that was on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Earlier today, they announced that they are raising increasing the value of the capital raise, which is now up to $2.7 billion. That's through a share price of $243. For between 737 million up to 847 million, and the discrepancy is based on if the underwriters want to issue more shares. They ended up selling more shares because they see the demand to be higher than the minimum, which is in this case 700 million. And Elon himself wants to buy 25 million of those worth of those shares,
which isn't a huge amount. That's like one bad tweet versus fines, or 1% of the 2.7 billion.
Yeah, it's something that you can wipe out with just a few tweets, quite easy.
Right.
No, but seriously, yeah, it is a small amount compared to his, like, I think his stake in the company is like 8 billion at this point, something like that. So yeah, 25 million is not making a big deal, but it's just a show of faith kind of type of deal.
Thing.
Yeah, it's symbolic.
Also,
it's still $25 million.
Yeah, I would like $25 million. I'd be cool with that. Also, it kind of revealed kind of his financial situation, his personal financial situation.
Oh, you mean the loans?
Yeah, and he had like what, $500 million in loans or something?
Yeah, that's not exactly new. It's
no,
been
it's
like that
less than before. I think.
Yeah, it was $600 million just 2 years ago. Yeah, then so that was the last capital raise. So that's all we know about this. It's kind of weird that we know, like, we get to know this stuff, but I think it's fair at the same time because, yes, he is putting his share of Tesla, which is a publicly traded company, as collateral to those loans. And why we know about it is because the lenders are the same banks that are underwriting this capital raise from Tesla. And I don't know about you, Seth, but I know some people have like are put on their conspiracy theory hats on, and no. They see things about some collusion maybe between the analyst side, the capital raise side of the banking system, and then you have Elon Musk, who also owes hundreds of millions of dollars to those banks. Especially, there's supposed to be a Chinese wall between all those different divisions at those banks, but.
I mean, they're under pretty close scrutiny. I think if anything's not, I mean, me personally, it sounds kind of shady, but I'm sure it's legal. If it wasn't legal, like there's a billion people with, you know, inspecting every single T and I dotted and crossed that, you know, Tesla submits to the SEC and to all this stuff. So I'm sure whatever gets through will be scrutinized as much as possible.
Yeah, and with those things, though, it's not always about like whether it's, well, it can be illegal, but it's just so hard to prove those things. So they sometimes right. Just go unprosecuted. But anyway, it's just a conspiracy theory at this point. But yeah, ultimately, when Tesla does raise money like that on the market, they have to give a reason or like what the proceeds going to be used towards. And in this case, in the past, before, it was always like they would match it with the announcement of the Gigafactory, for example. Then they raise money for that. We want to accelerate the Model 3 program. Then they announce stock offering for that. In this case, they literally says that it's for general use. Then we learned earlier today that yesterday there was a call with some investors held by the underwriters, specifically Goldman Sachs and Citigroup. And the Musk was on that call and he was explaining a little bit more while they were raising the stock beyond just saying that. Sorry, my microphone is just falling apart right now. Beyond just saying that it's for general use. And he did explain that it's more like a cushion, like to make sure that they have enough in the bank in case of a downturn in the market, in the general market, and especially Tesla, or any kind of unforeseen events. And it is especially interesting in the context that I think we discussed this last week, did we, about Tesla's cash position. In the context that they only had delivered like a small percentage of a car until 10 days by the end of the quarter, and the cash position went down by $1.5 billion, which means that at some and went down to $2.2 billion. So if and Tesla only gets the revenue once the car is the cars are delivered, which means that at the end of the quarter, before the very end of the last quarter, Tesla's cash position might have been dangerously low, like.
Right. And I think that's what kind of motivated the decision to Fred might be back in a little bit. I think that's what motivated the decisions to like cut the whole retail thing off and change prices quite a bit. And then like a good like one thing that may have been a cash infusion was actually announcing the $35,000 Model 3. By announcing it, that a lot of people threw their money down at that. And I mean, it's, you know, $2,500, but times a lot of people, theoretically, that might have saved their short-term cash position. These are the kind of things you do if you're really running out of cash and like can't make payroll, can't make payments for supplies, those kind of things, you know, rents due. So Tesla was acting very strange toward the end of the quarter. They made a lot of really weird decisions. That would explain it. And I think
those decisions were pushed by the cash position that was so low they were panicking?
Well, I mean, if not that, what was it?
Because it was I completely agree. It looked like panic, really. So now, but like I've said in the past many times, never bet against Elon Musk's capability to raise capital. It's just second to none, really. Like, the guy is good at raising cash.
Though he could have probably done it a lot easier at the end of last year.
Yeah, we've been calling for them to do that for a while now. On the podcast, we went through the whole thing about who needs to pay for those mistakes. It's just... is it the employees, like with the layoff? Is it the customers with the incessant price changes, or is it the investors with some dilution in the market, like they did just now?
And frankly, though, I mean, it hasn't been that bad. The stock price has gone up. I think it probably, you know, getting that extra cash has made investors a little bit less afraid of bankruptcy or whatever.
But the price did go down like in the ramp up to the announcement. Like, we knew it was coming for a while, ever since the conference call where Elon said that he was open to it. Like, we knew it was coming at this point. Right. Like, there was no doubt. Well, little doubt. And now not only it was increased earlier today with a new filing to up to $2.7 billion. Historically, so now it's between 2.3 and 2.7. Historically, Tesla always, with a capital raise, it's always the full amount. So I expect Tesla to get $2.7 billion of proceeds from this capital raise, which are going to increase their position to close to $5 billion if this quarter they end up being cash flow neutral, which I think, I'm not sure it's the guiding that, right? I think they're guiding like maybe a slight loss again or something. No, depends not again. The last quarter was a big loss.
The original Elon Musk, like, we're never going to be negative again versus last quarter. When I think they said at the earnings call, they said that they might go negative.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the why they need a cash raise, because if they go negative this quarter, and they were, you know, kind of on death's door last quarter, financially speaking, you know, with cash, I think there's plenty of value in the company and the facilities and everything. So I don't think they're really in that big of trouble. Mm-hmm. I just think, you know, things are tight.
They're not that big in trouble, but cyclically, like, sometimes something happens. There's just a few issues that converge at the same time, and then Tesla is just running it so fast that it puts them in danger when there's just a few error that comes at the same time. And I think a bigger cushion like that of 3, 4, 5 billion, maybe even, it's not a tad big of a luxury, I think. And during that same investor call that we referenced earlier, Elon also made the prediction about the value of Tesla, saying that you're going to be worth $500 billion, which is actually down from a previous prediction of his that says that Tesla is going to be like the first $1 trillion company, or among the first company to reach a $1 trillion valuation. Now he says $500 billion, but he said, I think he meant it more like it is only the self-driving aspect of it's going to be worth $500 billion. That's how I understood it. Of course, we weren't on the call. It was just for a few investors. But what came out of it is, I think he meant that the self-driving aspect of Tesla is going to be a $5 billion business. That's $500 billion. Yeah.
That's a big bet on self-driving, because not only does he have to, or Tesla have to, prove to people that their technology works, but they also have to get the government to okay it. And if they're riding on, hey, we're going to get this done at the end of this year, I don't think it's very likely, just because even if the technology is most of the way there, or even all the way there, I don't think the government's going to be, or different government jurisdictions are going to be, you know, all behind it. I think a lot of people, constituents, are afraid of self-driving. So I don't see it coming as soon as Tesla wants. So that's a lot of, you know, they got to have a lot of backstop on that bet to get it pushed. You know, maybe it happens next year, maybe it's even further off.
Yeah, because the argument here is that if they have like a million vehicles that become self-driving overnight, then those vehicles become revenue generating assets, not just at the time of purchase, but continuously as they participate in Tesla's robotaxi ride-hailing system. And but like you said, that's not that. Well, we think of it as overnight, because once the technology exists, it's just about a software update. It's going to happen on a jurisdiction basis, so depending on when the regulators updated. But I would assume that Tesla's going to focus on like some of its biggest market, like in California, for example. If you can just convince California to approve Tesla's self-driving system at whichever point it happens overnight, that alone is probably worth like tens of billions of dollars in the riding fleet, just on the based on the size of the market alone and the concentration of Tesla vehicles there. So there's definitely a lot of opportunities there if Tesla is right about this approach to self-driving on the vision base only and stuff like that, which we went into last week with the autonomy investor day, it was, right? That's what they call it.
But I mean, it's just such a big bet, and so many little things can go wrong. Like, I mean, like that Uber driver that ran over that woman, like if one Tesla vehicle kills somebody, there's not going to be a self-driving vehicle on the road for a year at least. And that's kind of almost bound to happen.
Oh, yeah, it would happen for sure.
So,
because they will reduce the number of accidents, but not 100%.
Right.
So as they become more prominent on the roads, it's inevitable at some point. But hopefully they just look at the raw data itself and not look at the optics of it, because the optics look awful, of course. If a robot kills a human, it's just like...
Yeah, and
it sounds so
I'm
bad.
Sure, the media and the public will look at the raw data and they're not going to sensationalize anything.
I'm sure you're being sarcastic right now. But at the end of the day, if you look at it intelligently, then of course you have to look at the fact that if they did reduce accident, and even if they do kill someone at some point, it's still worth it, because humans do kill people all the time on the roads. It's just that's something that we accept, while we don't accept it for robot. You have to look at it the same way that mechanical failure result in death too. So like sometimes there's a death on the road, there's a road death, and it's not a human's fault. It's just like there's a mechanical failure in a vehicle that caused a death, and we accept that a lot more than if it's the actual error of a software. But it's extremely similar if you look at it on the big picture basis, I think.
Yeah, I think even stuff like a flat tire can cause mm-hmm. an accident.
And then there's not going to be any end line on that.
No.
But if you see that software mistake in the driver system resulting in that, then of course the line is a lot more sexy. It's a robot kill human. I mean, it's some kind of Terminator type of deal. Anyway, $500 billion. I think he's right. If the self-driving is right, I think the valuation makes sense, but they need to deliver on it. All right, we're going to move to something we don't often talk about when it comes to Tesla, is the solar business at Tesla. We don't talk about it a lot since they acquired SolarCity, because it just hasn't been a big part of the business, really. Even though it's a big part of the overall equation to go completely electric in the transport system, you need to have that electricity being generated through renewable sources like solar. So it's an important part of it, but Tesla hasn't focused on it that much in terms of growth, so that the growth has actually been slowing down by a lot, but they instead focus on profitability, which is fair. I mean, especially considering they've been doing the same on the car side. But now they want to go back to growth, and they want to do it through a cost cutting. But the announcement this week, I hate when Tesla does that. They announced it through an interview instead of like releasing all the information on there. They just did an interview. What's his name? Sorry, what is his name? The new head of Tesla Energy is.
I forget too.
I'm blanking on his name, but I have it here somewhere. Is Sanjay Shah? S-H-A-H. How do you pronounce that? Shah? He's a new head of energy at Tesla Energy. And the way that Tesla announced the new pricing is by just sending in to do an interview in the New York Times. And it wasn't apparently properly explained on the New York Times how they are achieving those new price. He said that in the interview that Tesla's going to undercut the average residential solar price by 38% in the U.S., which would be massive. But that wasn't represented very well, because it's actually closer to like 18%, because they did that for, like, I can't think for the federal tax credit for them, but not for the average. They use basically the average cost to solar versus their price after federal incentive, which is, of course, a significant part of it. I think it's still 30%. Is this 30% in the U.S.?
At the end of the year, it goes down to 26%. But yeah.
26%, okay. There's a phase out. So it's closer to 18%, which is still good. They're talking about average price of $175 to $199 per watt, which is very good. But again, after federal tax credit. So all they are doing that is they are going to reduce significantly the number of home visits So when you are ordering a residential solar system, you you get a quote after someone visits your house, look at your electrical system, look at your roof, evaluates your energy needs. A lot of that has been already moving to being done remotely. SolarCity has patented a bunch of solar system configuration system through satellite images. So they use like Google Map basically, and they see your roof, and they can calculate the amount of sun that it gets, if it has any shading with the trees around or anything like that. And they can, to a certain degree, configure a system just based on that. Google is doing that on its own too. There's a bunch of other companies doing the same thing, but they're still, they still require some home visits just to look at your electrical system itself, make sure that nothing has changed from the satellite images or anything like that. Now what they're doing is that they are making the homeowner take pictures of the electrical box, of the roof and everything, and they think that only from there they're going to be able to configure a system remotely. And also they are only setting those systems by increments of 4 kilowatts. So they are not gonna, the, my understanding is that they're not gonna design any more custom system for specific roofs that are more complicated. They're just gonna do a, I don't remember what 4 kilowatt is in terms of panel. I think it's like 8 panels or something like that.
I think it's more than 10.
So
each panel is like 300 watts. So
I think they're more than that. I think they're 330.
So it's around 10 panels or eight panels, I guess.
12 panels. It's 12 panels.
Okay.
So they have 12 panels and they're going to, you can get more than 4 kilowatts, but it's just going to be in those increments of 12 panels. So you need to have the space on the roof.
12.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot of power, actually. Like 12 kilowatts is like, Most houses would be fine with that.
Yeah.
Most energy.
And now you can configure the system straight up Tesla's website. You can add power walls if you want.
Yeah, I should say that I'm getting power walls now, and I got the same sent to the same thing where I have to take pictures of my electricity system and all this other stuff. It took like, I don't know, 30 minutes to go around and take pictures of everything. So it's,
if you can save a few $1,000, it's worth it, right?
Yeah. They're getting all the information they would get from somebody who came out.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe not like, you know, the physical, like what it feels like there, what it, you know, I don't know, like how good the roof actually is, those kind of things. But for the most part, they're getting all the information they need. They kind of decide like, well, they see your bill, they know how much electricity usage you do, so then they can kind of estimate or help estimate like how many power walls, whatever, or you can just do that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On the configurator.
Yeah, and I think they're still pushing something where if you have a power wall or if you order a power wall, you're gonna be like way up the list of if you want a solar system too. Mm-hmm. So they're trying really much to combine both. I mean, if you even go like configure a system right now on Tesla's website, I think it's the default setting is like 2 power walls too. So they want more than a power wall. So, but of course, in some places you have a lot of value in that, adding a power wall there. But yeah, it sounded like a bigger news than it actually was when we look into it a little bit more. So the prices in some market, Tesla is going to be very competitive, but might not be the case everywhere. So we still suggest to maybe like get a quote from SolarCity and make sure that it's really cheaper. But if it is, man, and if you're paying a lot of electricity right now, like go for it.
Yeah, and to transition kind of to the next story, Tesla or the power companies, you know, power walls have become more valuable than kind of initially, you know, maybe Tesla knew this, but the public didn't really understand like some of the added value of having a power wall. So yeah, I'm kind of figuring that out now because I'm going through the process, but you know, most energy companies have a time of use plan. So energy is very cheap in the evening when nobody's using, or at night when nobody's using it, but during the day and in the evening, rates go way up because a lot of people are using it and they're kind of incentivizing people to use electricity at night, specifically things like charging your car, doing the wash, doing dishes, running your pool pump, those kind of things. What's kind of interesting about the Powerwall is that you can kind of shift your power needs to the night. So the Powerwall can charge up all night and run during the discharge power during the day when rates are very expensive. And so much so, I don't know what things are like in other parts of the country, but in Vermont and New York, where we stay, the electricity is 10 times or even more times as expensive during the day as at night. So every time the Powerwall charges and discharges, so like every day, we're saving, you know, like 50, not 50 bucks, but like a few bucks, $5 a day and hundreds of dollars a month. So a, you know, $3,000 to $6,000 Powerwall kind of pays for itself pretty quickly in this particular case. If in other places, the difference between night and day charging or peak charges aren't as great, then maybe the Powerwall doesn't make as much sense. But I know demand charges all over the country are pretty high. So electric companies really like them because it kind of pulls it pulls the demand off. And in this particular case, so this is Vermont, Green Mountain Power, which is a very forward-thinking green energy company.
Owned by a Montreal corporation.
Yes, owned by, who is that?
Energy, I think it's called.
Yeah. They have had a Powerwall plan for a while now, and I think they have like 2,000 Powerwalls deployed already. And what they were getting, I'm assuming this is just me making up stuff right now, but I'm assuming they were getting readings from the Powerwall and they're like getting readings from the meter. And they're like, why do we have two different things giving us readings? Where we only need the Powerwall. We don't need a meter anymore because the Powerwall is telling us how much electricity is coming in and going out. So what they're doing now as part of this pretty unique plan, I don't think it's being done anywhere else, is saying you don't need a meter anymore if you have a Powerwall as your gateway to your home. And in addition to that, the power company likes this because they can control it. They can say, discharge power now, and you and your neighbors and everybody around you will be getting power from the Powerwall, so they can kind of cut off demand charges and they don't have to fire up the peaker plants. So it saves them a bunch of money. In addition to that, it's really good for customers because if the power goes out, Powerwall fires up and powers your home for a certain amount of time. So it's kind of like a win-win-win situation. And because of the high cost of demand charging, it kind of pays for itself pretty quickly. And that's why Green Mountain Power is able to offer these things at such a low price. I think it's like $30 a month. Was that it?
Yeah, for two.
Yeah, $30 a month for two, which is kind of nutty. Like that's that's pretty cheap. And
or you can pay straight up the $3,000, I think. Yeah, this here. Yeah, so $3,000 up front for again. The way they were phrasing it, it's need like 250 ohms.
Right, and the downside, of course, is that they control the power, so they. Whenever they, it's basically their Powerwall in your home. But what happens is when the demand charges come in, like high rates are coming in, probably from Hydro-Québec, where they get most of their electricity. They shoot, you know, tell all the Powerwalls to come on and start producing electricity, and all of a sudden they have a virtual power plant producing electricity for almost free, and then charge those things up at night and have kind of a good system going there.
Very good system. And like, again, like I said, it's a pilot program. So it's not clear, like the valuation of what kind of value these exactly in that new smart meter replacement. But if it's anything close to the kind of discrepancy in price that they are charging customer versus the cost of the Powerwall, must be quite the value. So something to look into as the expanded program. I didn't mention how long it's going to be, right?
So I actually talked to them because I have a place in Vermont and I wanted to be part of the program. And they have a build your own or bring your own Powerwall. And they said, like, I called them up right when I got the email, which was, I think, right when the story came out, and they were already full. So, you know,
if they're already Vermont, full for the one that you get the Powerwall for $2,000, right?
No, not if
you
have full for the 250.
But if you bring your own Powerwall, they weren't full, right?
Right.
You can still get
right,
on the program.
Right. That's what I'm in. So
you're in. So what's the deal with that? So you already paid for your Powerwall. So did he give you money instead, or like
the, no, it's a little bit different of a situation. Mm-hmm. They don't give you money or take money away from you. They just allow you to use it as a demand charge thing. So basically you're allowed to do net metering. And if I put out electricity into the grid at, you know, a high peak period, I get that amount of money credited to my account. So it's really advantageous for me to give them electricity at the high demand periods, because that gets taken off my bill. And the woman I talked to on the phone was like, you'll probably never pay an electricity bill again. So that sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. All right. Last night, Tesla announced that they were releasing two new active safety features that are powered by Autopilot, but they're not initially for when you use Autopilot. Because when you use Autopilot, you already, especially the auto steer feature of the Autopilot, it keeps you within the lane. And the new feature basically take that when you're not using auto steer, they still aim to keep you within your lane. And it's called lane departure avoidance and emergency lane departure aversion. So if it's not, it's the same thing basically with within your lane to another or within your lane to the emergency lane on the side of the road. But it's something that's already quite available in other vehicles already, where Tesla already had that really with the warnings. You can activate the warnings if you start embarking on another lane without putting your blinker on. But now it would also steer you back into your lane. And if you do it repeatedly, which could indicate that you are unconscious or something, then they will do the same thing that they do when you're on autopilot and you stop responding to the apply pressure on the steering wheel alerts, also known as the autopilot nag. And they will slow the vehicle down and stop you on the side of the road. So it's sort of a way to bring on existing safety features in the autopilot system to when you don't drive on autopilot. I would like to do like a comparison maybe with different automakers that have those kind of features, and just how good it is compared to Tesla's, because Tesla is powered on the autopilot, which we know is by far the best driver assist system at this point. So if you can leverage that technology to release active safety features, then you get some pretty good stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how good it is. I haven't received the update yet. Apparently it's going out right now to Model 3 vehicles, and it's going to start going out to all the Autopilot 2.0 and up vehicles soon enough. So let's keep an eye out for that. Speaking on full self-driving, those features are also free. Everything that's safety related is free in Autopilot, unlike the self-driving package and the Autopilot package. Though the Autopilot is now not free, but it's included. It's standard on all vehicles, or almost all vehicles. And as promised by Elon Musk, they are increasing the price of the full self-driving package. Right now, it went from $5,000 to $6,000 if you buy before delivery. Now, after delivery, now it's $8,000. So it's pretty steep. And the reason for that, so unlike all the previous price changes that Tesla has been going through over the last few months, this one has been as a clear focus, which is on making, through the statement that Musk have been saying for the past few weeks, that Tesla vehicles are becoming appreciating assets instead of depreciating assets. And there's some confusion on that. As soon as I posted the article, people went on my back. It's not appreciating assets. It's just because they're increasing their price, they are appreciating assets because they are becoming revenue generating assets. Those are two different things. I mean, if you're a revenue generating asset, you can still be a depreciating asset. The two are not necessarily related. What Elon said specifically, and I asked this question on Twitter, and he responded, is that he's claiming they are appreciating assets because Tesla is going to gradually increase the price of the full self-driving package to increase the price of the vehicle, and that will, in theory, make the vehicle an appreciating asset, because if you go to buy a new one, it's going to be more expensive than people bought their cars before. So technically, you could retain your value better or even increase in value. Though at $1,000 increments, I don't think that's going to be really the case much, especially if you consider that right now, even with the $1,000 increase, the overall price of the Autopilot and full self-driving package combined together is still less than it was a few months back. So not exactly appreciating asset just yet, but he says that they're going to increase even more. At one point, he said up to $3,000, but even just $3,000, I really don't see the vehicles becoming appreciating assets until they become also revenue generating assets, which should be whenever the Tesla network is coming up. But that could be a year away.
Yeah, it could be anytime.
Mm-hmm. Anytime. All right, now let's get into all the Tesla shenanigans when it comes to the new Canadian incentive. So the Canadian incentive, for all our Canadian listeners right now, $5,000 for the federal incentive just came into effect Wednesday. So now you have a $5,000 on all electric vehicles that have a starting price of $45,000 or less, and with option up to $55,000. So that includes a bunch of vehicles. And it didn't include Tesla at first because the base price of the standard range Model 3 was $47,000. By the way, I'm all going to be talking about in Canadian dollars right now. We switch accounts in dollars, which is about the $1.3 US dollars. So what Tesla did is that they released a vehicle on Wednesday when the price came into effect at $45,000, a new base price for the Model 3, but the software lock the range at only 150 kilometers. That's 93 miles of range, which is ridiculously low.
Yeah, why did they choose that particular number?
Well, because they don't want to sell that car.
Why not choose like 2 miles or 2 kilometers? Or
well, that would be just like obviously ridiculous. But 150 kilometers is also ridiculous. So,
okay. And the round number, it's ridiculous.
But yeah. So what we need to understand here, and I think Seth is just like, are you still there, Seth? Okay, I just lost Seth. I'm not sure if I'm still on.
Yep, you're on.
Okay, all right. All right. All right. Yeah, okay. So that's something that Tesla did in the past, like in Germany, where they had a similar situation. They released a least expensive version of the car with software lock features and everything, and then you can just unlock the features later. It was an issue in Germany for a while, though I think it has been resolved since. But in Canada, it was pretty straightforward. If you look at the actual law, all you needed is a price lower than $45,000, and then you can have any kind of option available for up to $45,000. So Tesla could have released a decent car to range of like 200, 250, 300 kilometers of range at $45,000, and it would have been okay. Or they could have released the standard range version, which is, what is it, 300 kilometers of range, I think, the real standard range version, and which was $47,000. They could have also made that available if one of the versions with a lower range was $45,000. Because you have to keep in mind that the standard range version of the Model 3 is already a software lock version of the standard range plus. There is no different battery pack. So Tesla was already selling a software version of $47,000. They just reduced the range further and break that down to $45,000. But what happened is that, as we've been trying to make it clear for a while, Now Tesla doesn't want to sell that $45,000 car or $47,000 Canadian, $35,000 US. That's why they put the listing off the website, and now it's only a half the menu item. And so in the in Canada, it's it was very useful in the sense that they could achieve that pricing without even listing that vehicle. But they went a step further now to make sure that no one buys that car, which is reducing the range so far down to 150 kilometers of range. And now that that car is basically like unsellable, it's not like the value is just not there. And now you can, no one is selling 90 miles range car anymore. The range have gone up over the last few years, and Leafs is way up. The Hyonic is way up and like that. And those cars are all way cheaper than $45,000 before incentive or even after incentive. So, I think so. At the end of the day, what it really shows that Tesla is really trying not to sell any base version of the car, because they could have still offered a base version at $47,000. Now, in Canada,
and they're not. And what's kind of weird is they're not saying, "Hey, you can upgrade to the standard range or the standard rated plus for whatever the cost difference is."
Yeah. What we assume is that they would offer the car at 150 kilometers of range, and then offer the 300 kilometers of range with a $2,000 upgrade,
or $3,000 or $4,000, whatever it costs.
Well, it should have been $2,000 because
to go up to the standard range, but the standard range plus, even they're not even, because that it's all the same battery pack.
It's all the same battery pack. And when Tesla launched the standard range version, they did say that every owner with the standard range version would be able to upgrade to a standard range plus option. It's not the case for the Canadian version here. They're really not trying to sell that car at all. And I think it's a bummer, because even though I get why they were coming from with it, they were trying to get the standard range plus eligible on it, and they needed a lower expensive version for it. But there should be something else available, because now in Canada, unlike in the US, even though it's not listed on the website, you can still get that $35,000 car if you are willing to jump through some hoops to make it happen. But in Canada now, like, no, you shouldn't buy that car. That makes no sense. So now the least expensive version of the car is a $55,000 version minus the $5,000 federal credit that you have now. So we're talking about before any other type of credit, which comes out at a $50,000 car, which is still quite expensive. So I'm disappointed in that, because I wish that Tesla would really sell a decent Model 3 in Canada for $45,000 before incentive. It's not the case right now, because that 150 kilometers range version just makes no sense. I have a lot of friends and family that were looking for the base version of the car at $45,000, but with a decent range, of course, and that's just not available right now, which is frustrating, really.
Okay, so hear me out on this, and we've talked about this a little bit before. You buy the 93-mile one against Tesla's wishes, but they have to make it available. You drive it around for a little bit and you say, "Hey Tesla, I have your car. Like, we're not exchanging money anymore. I've already given you a bunch of money, but I have a huge battery pack in this car and I would like to, you know, have access to it. What if I give you the difference in money?" You're saying Tesla is not going to take the money and software unlock the rest of the battery.
It wouldn't make sense that they would, but then why are they telling people right now that they don't? Some people are saying it's
because they don't want them to buy it.
Yeah, so they don't want to buy it at all. So then you're taking a risk by assuming that Tesla is going to eventually...
Because I'm assuming that two things. One, that Tesla doesn't want you to buy it at all. But two, maybe Canada has a stipulation. I'm sure there was some talk. Canada probably has a stipulation that you can't just do an easy unlock.
That's the thing. So I reached out to Transport Canada about that, because some people were claiming, "Oh, it's because the Transport Canada is not allowing it." And someone at Tesla did the same thing. They alluded, not straight up saying, "Oh, I don't think they were up to that." I reached out to them, and all they said is that automakers need to submit the vehicles that they want to be eligible to the $5,000 incentive. And Tesla submitted those two cars, the standard range plus and the software lock version at 150 kilometers of range. And they were both approved because it both made sense and both work within the requirements. There's no reason why they, because again, that 150 kilometers car is a software lock version already. So they could offer a 300 kilometers software lock version for $47,000, and which would be the same as the 35,000 version in the US. They're not doing that for some reason, and that reason is, of course, they don't want to sell that car.
Right, because they can't make money on it.
Yeah, like they do in the US, like, well, even though they officially do say it of the Menu item, but that's more an optic type of thing that they've been promising it for a while, so they want to keep it at least for a while, we think.
But they would sell a ton of those in Canada. Like in the US, they're going to sell some of those, but in Canada, there's so many incentives that they would sell a ton of those.
Exactly. So that's where your point comes out, where why they choose 150 kilometers of range. They choose 150 kilometers of range, and why also they won't, they say that they won't unlock the vehicle is because they know that unlike if they are making it still somewhat attractive in the US, in Canada, it would be much more attractive, especially in Quebec, where you would get essentially $13,000 incentive. So even though you don't get autopilot with it, you don't get, it's not as much of a value item if you're able to pay the $50,000 of a standard range plus version. It would be on the value basis a great car because you end up paying $32,000 Canadian dollars. And you get a very good range, and you get all the advantages of a Tesla with the software update and everything. And that car would sell very well. And as we understand it, it would sell at a loss for Tesla. So that's why they are very not. So people got mad when I said, do not buy that car. I'm not the one saying, well, I'm saying it because you should definitely not buy it. It's not good value right now. But it's not me saying it specifically. It's Tesla that's saying it. If you read between the lines, they don't want you to buy that car. Otherwise, they would have not chosen the arbitrary number of 150 kilometers as a software lock version, and or they would have offered a software range upgrade.
So I kind of disagree, and here's why. I think you should buy that car if that's your space, because I think down the road, Tesla will offer an upgrade to it that unlocks the full battery, because why in the heck wouldn't they? I mean, I know they don't want you to buy the car, but once you bought it,
so you need to be calling their bluff, basically.
Right.
You need, because Tesla is, yeah. I mean, I get your point for sure, but I still think it's a risk if Tesla is saying, because you know how Tesla customer service is too.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not always easy to, because what you're saying makes complete sense. Like if you, like you play dumb and you're like, oh yeah, I'm okay with 150 kilometers of range for $45,000 before incentive, and you go for it because you're calling Tesla's bluff that they're gonna take my $5,000 or whatever I'm gonna pay to get that 300 kilometers of range later on. But I mean, you're gonna call someone, and then what are you gonna do? You're gonna call Tesla, and then they say, well, I don't do that. I don't unlock vehicles. Like, I don't, like, if we don't have an option or something. So they right. need to create that option in the customer service. And then unless you get to what you could do, if enough people do buy that car, and then you can do some kind of public pressure campaign on Elon Musk on Twitter or something like that, put pressure on him today. And we have, especially in Quebec, if you do get that $13,000 on it, you get enough people to buy that, then... Yeah, and then yeah, so I see it like so Tesla. We have 1,000 people in Quebec right now willing to give you $5,000. The $5,000 makes sense. It would be $2,000 because it was $47,000 for a 300 kilometers range. So we have $1,000, 1,000 people in Quebec willing to give you $2,000 to get that range that you were originally selling, because just a few weeks ago, just a week ago, they were selling the base version for $47,000. So we want that. That's what we want. That's what you promised. And I suppose it would work because it just makes so much sense.
It's just free money for Tesla. Why wouldn't they take it? The other thing is you could always give Jason Hughes and his buddies a call and have them.
That's what I was thinking too. I was thinking like it's there. The energy capacity is there. So if someone smart figures out a way to just hack it, then yeah. I mean, not only you get the 300 kilometers of range of the original standard range, but you can completely unlock it to the standard range plus, and then it makes sense.
That's a valuable hack.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Because then it's not the $2,000, it's like $5,000 of value that you get without paying at all, because you still get the $45,000. So you basically save $2,000. Yeah. All right, but again, I don't think Tesla handled this whole situation very well. If anything, at the end of the day, it shows that he cannot or don't want to sell right now the base version of the Model 3. The Model 3 did launch with the first right-hand drive version, and starting with the UK, probably Japan, Australia, and a few other right-hand drive markets going to follow soon. But right now, the configurator online is available in the United Kingdom. Starting price of £38,000. Apparently, that's what people were expecting, but they were expecting that before the plug-in grant, which automakers apply directly in the UK. So it's now that's after the £3,500 plug-in grant. So people are saying that the price is a little bit higher than they expected. But, I mean, it's still the by far the cheapest Tesla that you can buy in the UK right now. And they have very good incentive, apparently, in the UK when it comes to electric vehicles for business use. So check that out in the UK. If you have a business car, you might be able to upgrade for a Model 3 for cheap. Check it out. That's what I'm told. Not very familiar with all the UK incentives, especially when it comes to business cars. All right. One cool thing that I saw earlier this week that I think it's worth mentioning is that I found a new patent application from Tesla. That's pretty cool. It's about a new sunroof lighting system with electrical tint in it. We've seen that before, just the electrical tinting system.
Yeah, we originally thought that's what Tesla Glass was referring to.
Yeah. But it's not very popular in cars right now because it's crazy expensive. But I've seen it in the latest McLaren. The McLaren has it for the sunroof, where you just press a button and there's an electromagnetic, electrochromic, they call it, electrochromic tinting system, so that you just go with a very dark tint, not opaque, but very dark tint on the sunroof to block the sunlight. So you don't need to pull something on the sunroof. You just click a button and the same glass goes dark, which is very cool. Tesla is taking that concept and pushing it further by also hiding the lighting system, the passenger cabin lighting system inside that glass. So that the glass has three functions. It's a sunroof that it's completely clear if you want just to get baked in the sun and whatnot, or the sun is not out and you want to see clearly at night, or it's at night and you want to see the stars or whatnot. The glass roof can be completely clear. If you're in the sun and you want to block it a little bit, you can you can turn the electrochromic tinting system. Just click a button and you have a darker sunroof. And then if you're at night and you want to have lighting instead of a... Because Tesla's sunroof are pretty big. If you look at the Model 3, it's the whole car, basically. The whole roof of the car. So then you have to have the lighting system for at night in the sides, or they have the B pillar on top that's on the roof that you can have light here. But maybe in the future, Tesla's going to have a full glass roof or something. And they still want a lighting system that's incorporated in it. So apparently they managed to embed LEDs on the side of the glass, and they can project the light through the glass inside the cabin. So it's basically a three-function sunroof system that's both completely clear, both tinted, and also with a lighting system embedded in it. I thought that was pretty cool. But again, it's just a patent application. Sometimes companies file patents for technology that he never end up using. That was filed in 2017, and it's just now being released. That's pretty rare. It's only one inventor listed on that patent application, Zhang Mingyong, who's a panel display engineer, formerly working at Apple. He was all those big display company. He worked at all of them, the LG, Samsung, and everything. But most recently was Apple before he joined Tesla in 2016, and he's still working there now. He's the one that developed that smart glass sunroof lighting system, however you want to call it. All right. Tesla warns of upcoming shortage of battery minerals like nickel, copper, and lithium.
I mean, so Yes. Obviously, there's going to be a shortage because there's going to be a lot more batteries being built. But you have to wonder how much this is just Tesla trying to keep prices low on those things. Mm-hmm. They want to increase capacity, which lowers price.
Yeah. That was a comment from, we don't know her, Sarah Maricel. She's apparently the Tesla's head of global supply for battery metals. She was at a conference for Benchmark Minerals, which is a cool website and firm that tracks minerals and prices and new development and everything like that. I used them a few times. They're a pretty cool website. Anyway, they held a conference about the battery, especially battery minerals, and we heard a few some news coming out of it this week, especially a new Senate bill that's going to try to sort of streamline the process to get a mine approved, a mining production company approved for in the U.S., especially for battery minerals, like especially lithium. But what was interesting with Tesla, I think, with the comments, is that the Tesla doesn't seem to be much worried about lithium or cobalt. Cobalt is often the one that automakers talk more about, because it's the one that's the least mined, I think, of all the minerals inside the batteries. And it's also the one that's controversial because of the fact that a lot of it right now is still coming from the Congo, which has a lot of issues with child labor and just overall bad labor conditions. So it's they also have some legit mining operation there. So people are trying to all shift the supply chain from the legit mining operation, because at the end of the day, the raw resources are still geographically located there. So you have to go to there. So you have to just improve the labor condition there, not allow any child labor, which is of course unacceptable. But Tesla use a lot less cobalt per volume inside its batteries. The chemistry that they use, it's not cobalt heavy, but it does use a lot of nickel, a lot of copper, which is there are more commonly mined minerals. So you'd think that it's not that big of a deal, right? But still there, and Tesla sees some global shortage of those minerals because of the rapidly increasing demand for electric vehicles, and in turn for batteries for electric vehicles. So it's something to watch out there. But beyond that too, I think you need to look at the volume is going to be so big that you need to look at the problem geographically and have a mining operation closer to the final products. And the whole market is shifting on that front, because historically batteries have all been coming from Asia. There's not that much battery cell production outside of Asia. And that was because most electronics companies, which was the biggest consumers of batteries, were all located in Asia. So that makes sense. But right now, the consumer electronics industry is not the biggest consumer of batteries. The single biggest consumer of battery in the world is Tesla right now. And they're going to have severe competitions from other automakers that are going big in EVs, like Volkswagens and companies like that. So the EV world is going to consume a lot more batteries than the consumer electronic world ever did, by a factor of, has to be in the hundreds, I think. I mean, if you look at an iPhone, how many do you think iPhone batteries it takes to in terms of energy capacity for a car, like a Model 3? I think it's like I think it's like 4,000, 3,000 or 4,000, something like that. So yeah, it's a giant difference. So, and those electric vehicle production, hopefully it's a lot more spread out around the world. Like China is still going to be a big deal, of course. It has a lead over much of the world. But there's also like Tesla, there's big production in the U.S. Germany's got big production too. There's a bunch of different places that have big electric vehicle production. And battery production is starting to get a lot closer to those vehicle production. We've seen that happening in the U.S. with the Gigafactory, of course. But now SK Innovation is also building a factory in the U.S. There's a few other companies that are building a factory in the U.S. Same thing is happening in Europe, where they're building in Poland and in Hungary. battery cell facilities to supply the German automakers and the French automakers too. So the whole landscape is completely changing right now. And it all the way it boils down all the way to the raw materials. And now you're going to need to mine those raw materials also closer to those production. And I think that's what the conference was looking at too specifically. Going to be a very, very interesting market, I think. Do you have anything to add on that, Sid?
Well, I mean, kind of going back to my original comments, I think Tesla wants to keep they don't want any demand constraint or supply constraints. They're going to be churning through tons of batteries. So a shortage in copper is going to increase their costs quite a bit. And, you know, back to your cobalt thing, I think Tesla has made it clear that they are looking to eliminate cobalt from their batteries entirely. Mm-hmm. So that would eliminate that particular issue. Although, you know, one could argue that maybe getting a clean supply chain free of child labor and other issues would be also a good thing to do. But getting cobalt out of the supply chain would be, you know, obviously a benefit. Also, cobalt is quite expensive. Compared
to, not that much anymore. The price went way down over the last few years.
I know it's a big part of the cost. Compared to nickel, obviously it's expensive.
But you have to keep in mind that some companies are still using like cobalt heavy chemistries. Most companies, Tesla is the exception in this case.
Right. So, you know, I think Tesla's quite the ways out in front. I think the other automotive companies are kind of learning like, we have to figure out our battery supply. We have to have a whole supply chain of not just batteries, but like we also have to worry about the raw materials, because any shortage of raw materials is going to really affect our battery cost and our, you know, delivery as well. And I think, you know, at the Audis of the world and Volkswagen and even the Koreans, Hyundai and Kia are finding out that they don't own their battery cell production, and they're kind of at LG or Samsung or Panasonic or SKI or whoever's whims and the market's whims. So, you know, good for Tesla getting out in front of this kind of issue. Obviously, it's a big part of their cost structure. It's important that they kind of know what's happening and are eliminating bottlenecks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, automakers are going to increasingly work more closely with suppliers all the way down to the mineral levels, I think. Hyundai, Ioniq, they launched a new version of the Ioniq. I suppose we can call it the 2020 version, though the hybrid and the plug-in version is going to come during the summer, but we don't care too much about those. The all-electric version is going to come in September. Features a much bigger battery pack, went from 28 kilowatt hours to 38 kilowatt hours. They're talking about an upgrade in range to 294 kilometers. That's 183 miles, but that's based on the WLTP standard. So we expect a real world or EP range closer to 165 miles range, which is still a pretty good upgrade. Of course, the Ioniq Electric was already known as like the king of efficiency in the electric vehicle world. With just a 28 kilowatt battery pack, they manage 124 miles of EPA range. So you're getting 40 more miles here. It's a pretty big deal. If they can keep the price similar, I think it's going to be a very good value, I think, for the price. Though you said that you said that the price might be like 10% higher.
Yeah, I think it's going to come out in Germany first, and they said there was going to be a price increase, although I don't think it was going to be a big one.
Yeah, because right now, it's like in Canada, it's like 32,000 Canadian, which is pretty cheap. If you add like the $13,000 an incentive in Quebec, you have a brand new $19,000 cars that you don't have to put gas in. I think that's a very good deal. But yeah, you also see a slight design refresh of the exterior, especially the front end, which has like an updated fake grille. Yeah, not a big fan of it. There's a way to make like a good fake grille that just looks okay. I like the Audi fake grille with the e-tron. I think it's fine. The hell happened to my voice there? And but this one is just not a right way to do a fake grill.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking there. It looks really fake.
Yeah, and
I think Tesla does the best thing with the no grill.
No grill, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's an electric car. Paint it white. Like, just make it, just, you know, whatever.
It's too big of a change, man. Yeah. It's, you gotta, for those legacy automakers, there has to be some very small incremental changes. It cannot be so radical as not having a plop in front of your front end of your vehicle.
Again, I think Tesla's 5 to 10 years ahead of everybody in so many different ways.
Yeah. Design of electric vehicles being one of them. You get that. You also get slightly updated interior, more premium options. Looks good, the interior. I mean, it looks more premium, which is, it's still a Hyundai, but if you're paying for a $30,000 car before incentive, it's nice to have, like, have it look like a $30,000 car. And I think it does in the interior right now. It looks very good.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, we're going to end on a funny note. Have you guys seen the Avengers Endgame movie? Endgames?
I've seen it. Endgame, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. And we're not going to do any spoilers because mainly for me because I haven't seen it. But I have seen one quick scene of it, which a scene of the product placement for the Audi e-tron GT. Audi is a big deal with the whole Marvel series. I think it's not just this movie. They've been doing some product placement with them for a few years now. They've done the Audi R8. I think Tony Stark was like the first person to get the R8. And the actor who played Tony Stark, of course, Robert Downey Jr., is a partner with Audi. He does like maybe, I don't know if it's a sport person type of deal or ambassador. He has some kind of promotion deal with Audi. And his character, Tony Stark, in the movie was driving the Audi e-tron GT, and the Audi e-tron SUV was also featured in the movie. Mm-hmm. But in one of the scenes, you can clearly hear them hiding some gas engine sound over the sound of the e-tron.
Yeah, and it wasn't like borderline. It was obviously like a big belching, like muscle car type of engine.
Yeah, because even when because in the scene, you can see him drive like fast. Like you can even like hear the tire squeals and everything. So he's coming fast, and you hear that loud gas engine sound. But then he slows down and he stops completely and just back up a little bit. And even then, you can hear a rumbling of an engine, which is completely insane in an electric car. But you can also hear a little bit of the futuristic sound, like some kind of electric motor winding sound in it too. So it looks like they put it like on top of it, which it makes no sense. I think it's a fail when it comes to product placement. You're trying to tell people that those cars are electric, hopefully. No, it wasn't something mentioned in the movie ever, though, right? Was it?
No, not specifically.
Yeah. And I mean,
you go back. It's more like an Audi placement, not an Audi electric car placement.
Yeah, that's a good point, but that's not how he sees it, though. They sent out press release and everything. Like, we're going, it's a part of our electric push and everything. And the Marvel series have been good on that. I mean, you remember when the Harley Davidson Livewire was featured prominently in the first movie, and that they made it clear that it was electric back then. And now it's not the case here. So anyway, we reached out to Audi because we're like, who made the mistake here? Is it the movie? Is it you guys or whatnot? And they did came back to me saying that they actually developed the sound with Marvel to develop a specific sound for that scene. But then they said that the movie ended up making the final sound and everything. So maybe they didn't have like final, but they didn't make it sound like it was a mistake or something like that. They did say that it was developed and partly as a partnership. Interestingly, this as well as teasing the series production version of the e-tron GT in the movie. Oh, cool. So that was not the concept. That was the production version. I just realized that by reading the statement.
Yeah.
I need to go back and watch it. Watch that scene again and see if this was the production version. And that, because I think they haven't released any production version. Just the concept.
Well, the fastback is really the tell there. And you don't see much of the fastback because it's kind of a front on.
But here is they said the production series of the GT, not the fastback.
Okay.
Audi is also teasing the topic of sound for its upcoming electric car. In the near future, regulation will require that electric cars make a sound in many markets around the world. So are they telling us that the because they're talking about the pedestrian sound?
They're kind of hinting that that's going to be the sound of the
electric car. That makes it. Well, no, they did say after that the sound that Audi developed for the e-tron GT in the new Emerger movie is not the actual sound of the GT series production version. So we've seen people like Jaguar doing that with the I-Pace, where they developing a fake sound that you can hear that's on top of the existing sound of the motor. But it's not a gas engine sound. It's just another different sound that's kind of weird.
Like a robot flying sound.
Yeah. In some version of the I think you can actually disable that, at least.
Right.
But here, what they almost intend to is that that would be, because they're talking about electric car having a regulation to make electric car make a sound. That's not the same thing as the Jaguar thing we're just talking about. You're talking about the pedestrian sound. So when at low speed, the car needs to make a sound. But it makes no sense to make that sound being a gas engine sound.
Right.
That normally just like a small sound, like people know that, hey, you have a car around you. Yeah, anyway.
Cars already make those sounds, like the Prius and the Bolt already.
Yeah. The Volt does, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, that's all for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. And we're going to see you same thing, same time, same place next week. Ciao.